Well, hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox Podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. Joining me tonight are James Fox and Mike Rankin. How are you doing, gentlemen?
Awesome, Ian. What's going on?
Nothing, you know, just watching the chaos with the 40-man roster and the roster decisions coming up here. How you doing, Mike?
This kind of feels weird, man. Not going to lie. But everything looks great, and I want to give you guys congratulations for everything that's gone down. James, you've been doing a great job taking over. And Ian, it's awesome to see you're willing to be a part of Future Sox and take your unique brand, bring it over to Future Sox and really take it to the next level. There's a lot of dedicated people on this team covering the White Sox, and it's just great to see. So happy to be with you guys.
Thanks. Appreciate it. So I guess I would start things off here, since you're here, Mike, what did you think about the Cease return on that, trade?
I thought the process itself was entertaining. Going back to the trade deadline last year, there's that argument, how much value are you going to get for Dylan Cease if you're willing to trade him last year at the deadline with 2.5 years? And I just felt like it would have been a great time because the return would have been unbelievable. Probably would have broke records for the amount of hysteria on social media. But I think the White Sox, they didn't feel like they played their hand, right? And I believe it was a matter of, at that time, we're going to ask for the moon because there's no reason not to. Didn't get any takers. But once the offseason hit, that's when I think it was the right time to attack. The value on the contract, obviously, was able to elevate the return. And it took a while, but ultimately I was excited to see what they got in return, because at first I was a little underwhelmed when I saw the two names. It was Iriarte and Thorpe alone, and then two more emerged. Big league reliever was important for this year. I think the White Sox did a pretty good job adding depth to the staff altogether, and I'm excited to talk about that. But to be able to land Samuel Zavala in that deal was great. And I think also, too, somebody reached out and asked me, why not Dylan Head? And I felt like Samuel Zavala at the time, or right now, projects to be a better hitter, ultimately. The kid looks really polished at 19 years old already at the plate, really smooth swing. And if you project him as a center fielder, it means he can play all three outfield positions. So that's quite an athlete that they got, but I think the upside with the bat is reason to get really excited. And then, of course, I listened to your podcast reacting to the trade on the night of, and I agree with your assessments of both top arms. And Iriarte, we don't know exactly what the future holds for him, but we know that the stuff is filthy. And with Drew Thorpe, he's an advanced arm that you feel like can maybe potentially debut at some point mid-season if all things goes well, because you look at the numbers, he doesn't have a lot of experience in minor league baseball yet, but in his age, in the way that he works mechanically and with his stuff, you'd like to see the velocity of the fastball get up there. But man, that's an exciting arm. So ultimately, I was pretty satisfied with the deal, and I love the fact that they built it around two arms, because I love breaking down pitching. And Drew Thorpe, also what's interesting about that is the fact that he got traded twice. And I think the Padres were willing to get rid of him because of the fact that he didn't spend a lot of time within the organization. That was a guy that, they received, spent, 3 months with, and then flipped him. So there's a lot of intrigue here. But with Drew Thorpe and his changeup, hopefully the fastball gets up. I just like how clean he is already as a starter. So there's a lot of arms. I'm excited about watching these arms develop.
I knew Mike was going to be a fan of a pitching package, sure. Yeah, it was like, it's like one of the first things I thought of. I'm like, oh, they're going. And I don't even know that we heard stuff all offseason, like, oh, Getz wants pitching, like, in return. I don't even know that that's true. I think they would have taken the highest end package they were offered. I just think it seems like teams aren't trading position players, at least not like the high-end ones that everybody was dreaming about, like, early in Dylan Cease talks, right? Like, everybody's like, oh, Baltimore, like, those dudes are on the Orioles right now. Some of those guys, right? Like, Colton Cowser and Kerstad and some of them. And I didn't really have any interest in Joey Ortiz anyway. So this is fine.
I will say before we move on, I will say that I think Chris Getz played this very well. It seemed like there were some regular teams in conversation with the White Sox, and then all of a sudden when the Padres got involved, it got spicy. And, you know, the White Sox weren't getting, I guess, who they were looking for with the Yankees, but, you know, you had more teams involved late, and it came down to the wire, and you had the Padres willing to give up three top 10 prospects. That's pretty cool.
Well, and so, Ian, we talked about that kind of, like, they got a lot, I think. Like, it's a good package, but it's still a little surprising that nobody was willing to, like, you know what I mean? Like, when I heard, oh, Preller's involved and it's the top offer, I don't know that I was expecting more necessarily, but I was, like, definitely expecting something that the other teams, like, wouldn't beat. And I don't know. This just seems like somebody could have, but maybe it's just they just think that highly of Drew Thorpe is probably what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, we talked to Jim Callis yesterday, and he said, which I agree with, that he's probably the top polished pitcher in the White Sox system. And I don't think that there's really any debate for that. I think, you know, of course, in true White Sox fashion, he comes out on the first outing that he has and gets absolutely shelled. And so the White Sox fans are all like, he sucks, you know, right out of the gate, you know, which is not really all that surprising, I guess. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do. I mean, that changeup is just filthy. And I have yet to see him really go to his slider at all in spring training. Like every outing that I saw him in, it seemed like he was just fastball, changeup, fastball, changeup. So I'm not sure if it was just the air in Arizona, you know, where, you know, you get that Magnus effect where things just don't move as well, except for when they get up in the air and then they travel pretty far. You just don't get the movement out of the breaking balls, and that could possibly be some of it. But, you know, again, I don't know. So looking forward to seeing the pitch mix, because I assume that we'll see him in Chicago within the next couple of months. You got anything else on the trade? Are you guys good to move on?
Well, I think it was important, just looking forward, that they traded him, Dylan Cease, that is, before the season started. I felt like as the clock continued to tick while the White Sox were using him as a starter, there was risk involved. So I think it was the right time to do it. I didn't think it was the right time at the deadline last year, because I just felt like the returns were unrealistic in expectation, and I don't think, you know, I didn't think any teams would be willing to do what it took to get him at that point. And the White Sox stood their ground, so I give them credit. In terms of just the depth now, you think about what they were able to get for Aaron Bummer, and, you know, you compound that with the Cease deal, and they're signing guys like Brad Keller, Chad Kuhl. I mean, this it's about time that the White Sox have some arms that, you know, you're not so stretched thin that if you're starting seven go, you know, or run into any sort of trouble, there's nothing beyond that. Now there's stuff. Might not be good, but it's at least interesting.
And the Charlotte rotation has more than one starting pitcher.
Yes, absolutely.
Which to me is going to save, you know, hours of my life watching this Knights team over the last 2 years with like a one-man rotation has been absolutely brutal.
So, Jeff, how do you think Jeff Cohen feels? Like, my God. Like,
Jeff had to switch his schedule. He had to go down to Kannapolis to see some baseball because, man, that Charlotte team last year.
Well, and I think me and Mike kind of, like, were thinking about it, but, like, we felt bad, right? Because Jeff's, like, boots on the ground. He's, like, right in Charlotte. It's, like, literally across the street. And we're like, hey, man, I think he brought it up, right? He was like, what do you think if I go to Kannapolis to see this Noah Schultz guy? I'm like, we think that would be a great idea, actually. Like that would work out awesome.
Absolute yeah. Glutton for punishment.
Jeff works really hard. Glad that he's on the team.
Absolutely. So I figured we could move over to the opening day roster. There has been a bunch of stuff going on social media today with quotes from Pedro. I'll go ahead and bring a couple of them up because, to me, one of them is actually a nice quote to read, and then the other one just kind of gives you a why do they let him open his mouth type vibes. So I'll go ahead and bring up the So Daryl Van Scowen says White Sox may wait till Thursday morning to make opening day roster official. We had this conversation pre-stream. This is exactly like what they do with the minor league teams. We never have any idea what's going on until they walk out onto the field opening day. So that's not really a surprise. But Pedro says we're already done or close to done. And what I mean by close is you never know what's going to happen by opening day. We feel pretty good about our camp and the roster going to Chicago. So I have to just say, what are you talking about? Like, either the roster's finalized or it's not, but you never know. You know, like, what are we even talking about here? Like, why are we playing these games? From rumors that I've heard is that people already knew that they're going up north, and they were told over the weekend, you know, like earlier this weekend. So why are we even having this conversation? Like, what's with all the cloak and dagger stuff? Yeah,
well, the one thing that's interesting, too, is they're playing the Charlotte Knights tomorrow in Arizona. But, I mean, most of the guys that are on the bubble will either, like, they'll either be on the White Sox or on the Charlotte Knights. So, like, it doesn't really matter. I don't know. I mean, look, we could probably go through it if we wanted to. Like, we kind of know the roster other than, like, a couple of pitchers and, like, whether they keep Nastrini like right away or they wait a week or whatever, you know, because they don't need him right away. But I mean, we saw the names. Tuki Toussaint is gone. Chris Lanuti's man, Jesse Chavez, is now in the Minnesota Twins bullpen.
Wah, wah.
So, you know, like, well, I don't know. We can get into it if you want. Pedro Grifol is a strange person. I was waiting for the "if they build it, they will come" line or something similar. Like, no, I'm sure there's more coming. You don't think he's baseball Boylan, Mike?
Look, he's my manager, right?
He's baseball Boylan. That's what he is.
But, and I tell you, yeah, he's not guaranteeing anything on that opening day roster. You know, yeah, he doesn't want to be held to the record, saying that the roster's finalized and then they make a mistake, because
that's true.
He wants his job.
Well, my favorite thing was that's like when I really knew that Dylan Cease was getting moved. Like, yeah, you kind of, yeah, like I had heard, you know, Texas is in, I'd heard saying it, whatever. And then when they asked him, he's like, I don't know, how am I supposed to know? Like, it's like, okay, he's gone. Like, that's fine. What are you asking me for?
What you did bring up though, James, is interesting, because I was thinking about this roster, and do they really need to have five starters on the 26th man to begin the season? Or would you rather get them going in the bullpen, add depth, have four, you have your four concrete starters, thinking about Garrett Crochet as mainly like a, you know, 60 pitch limit type guy, at least early on. There's value in adding an extra arm in the pen.
No, I thought they'd go with nine bullpen guys. And then I know, like, certain members of the beat kind of think, like, Nastrini is going to make the team, which is fine, right? But you don't need him the first weekend. Like, you just don't. The only issue with that is they don't have much optionable pitching. So you'd almost be, like, getting rid of a guy to keep a ninth pitcher, and then you'd have to, like, get rid of the ninth pitcher to bring up Nastrini. So I don't know what they're going to do. But, yeah, no, that plan makes the most sense. They just, like, don't have enough guys on their 40-man that can go up and down.
Yeah, I'm not really worried necessarily about the rotation right off the bat. I would be fine with them having a four-man rotation for the first couple of weeks or whatever. I don't think that it would really tax things too much. But then again, you know, you look at what they said about Michael Kopech in particular, saying that if they have him starting games, that it's going to tax the bullpen early, so they immediately moved him to the bullpen. So maybe they are worried about it and they want to go to a six-man rotation off early. I don't know. I'm interested to see what this roster construction looks like as we move forward here. And, you know, I mean, we might find out while we're driving to the park on Thursday, you know?
Yeah.
So who knows?
Well, I wonder if they bake that in, right? Like, they know that they're going to need to cover six innings for Crochet starts. They also can't do it for Kopech starts. But look, I want Mike's like opinion on this, because this is like what I've been saying. I think that they're just like trying to salvage anything they can out of Kopech, which makes me think that he's gonna, like, if they have a 3-1 lead on Thursday, I think he's closing. Like, just because, like, I don't think Michael Kopech's gonna be here long term. if they're willing to trade anything and everything, I think you try to prop him up and make him one of these like relief monsters and then deal him. So we'll see. I don't, if he's like the long guy or something, like I would be surprised. Like I think they want him pumping 100 and throwing sliders, and maybe it's the eighth inning, whatever, right? But I think it's like going to be a big time high leverage role probably.
Yeah, the Kopech stuff is, it's disappointing because, you know, when the White Sox acquired him, we were talking about this, James, thinking that he could be even better than Giolito at the time when we were covering the team. And, you know, there's so much value in being a starter. And when you're kind of transitioning to a bullpen role, it's disappointing with the upside. But considering what we know about Kopech, he's had a very unorthodox season or career from season to season. I think the 2019 and 2020 seasons were very challenging on just his baseball sense. You lost two seasons, essentially. And, you know, your body changes. You go through a lot. I think he's going to be a very good reliever. I think this is the path for him to have success in the bigs, mainly because it takes him, similar to Dylan Cease, but Cease's stuff is just better and he has more offerings. It takes Michael Kopech way too long to get guys out. And when you're working with two pitches, essentially, it's too easy for the hitter. And you're sitting fastball, he's missing the zone, and you know you're already in the third, and you're up at 65 pitches, and he's just laboring. If I'd like to see the usage, how often he's getting brought into the ballgame. Is, you know, is he available back-to-back days? And how long is it going to take until he is available back-to-back games? So ultimately, I think the stuff plays much better as a reliever. I'm really disappointed that it didn't turn out to be a regular starting pitcher. But for Kopech to stay in the league, this is it. He's got to be able to throw two pitches at the highest upside that he can provide.
Any thoughts, James?
Well, as far as what Danny asked, like, no, I think he's done. I think his starting days are probably over, because I think anybody that trades for him will keep him in that role, and then his next contract will be a reliever contract. But I mean, look, if he's awesome, like that'll be, I mean, even what Ronaldo Lopez just got 3 years and $30 million. And I know they're trying to start him, but I mean, I think we've seen the tragic end of that story. So, you know, so yeah, I mean, there's money to be made for this guy. I think it's hard to like probably have to swallow his pride and like be a reliever, right? But he doesn't really have a choice right now. It's a good point. Like what Mike said, he just like takes forever to get anyone out. Like Ian, you and I kind of question like I don't know that he has the temperament for the bullpen. Like I just like you can't walk guys, but maybe he'll think less and it'll be fine, right? You just go pump gas and throw sliders and you might be okay. You're not trying to conserve at all, right? So but yeah, no, they just the way that they made the move, like I thought it might happen, but I thought they'd let him start first, but they just like took one look in spring training and they were like, nope, this is like not going to be a thing.
I just wonder how much they considered, like how much Kopech in the rotation will damage the rest of the arms, you know, because of the usage, and you're putting your bullpen in jeopardy. You know, you're thinking about what the starting rotation is going to look like because, you know, Kopech can't be reliable every fifth day. So you just do it early and you put somebody else capable in that fifth starter role. And look, I'm really excited about Garrett Crochet. I mean, finally, we're getting an opportunity to see the White Sox commit to developing Crochet as a starter after getting drafted in 20, you know, being deemed as a starter. Chris gets the person who said they're going to develop him as a starter. And it's finally gotten to this point. We know the circumstances that, you know, led up to today, but I just always was of the belief that the best path for Crochet to have the best possible career in the big leagues is to allow him to pitch. And now I wonder how long it's going to take him to transition as a regular starter to be strong enough to go five innings. This could be the best pitcher in the White Sox rotation and one of the better arms in the American League. But I got to see him do it for 120 innings this year as a starter. I think that would be very, very encouraging. If you can get up closer to 140, maybe I'm just being extra optimistic. But like you put a number on it and you're able to get there, then all of a sudden you got a top of the rotation arm in 25 when you're thinking about being competitive again. So I just thought it was a really good development to see, and that the White Sox were willing to commit, because what do you have to lose this year?
Well, so it's something that we always kind of talked about, Mike, like, and the one thing I always said was, like, I thought this was the right plan for someone. I just, like, didn't think it would be for the White Sox, because I thought the White Sox would still be contending right now. Like, I often said, you know, could Garrett Crochet be starting for, like, Oakland, right, in 2024? Sure. Like, somebody should be doing exactly what the White Sox are about to do. But you can't if you're also, like, trying to contend. So, you know, it just kind of worked out this way, where the White Sox are going to be really bad, shocker, for anybody that isn't aware. But this is like the perfect opportunity for it. I don't know if it'll be quite as many innings as Mike's talking about. Like, if he gets like 90 to 100, I'm okay, because then I think he can throw 140 or 150 next year. I'm just curious to see how they do it, right? Is it going to be 33 inning starts? Are you going to let him go five sometimes and shut him down for weeks at a time? I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think that's why you have Brian Bannister. And then there was a question from James Coogan. Michael Kopech does have three options. So, yeah, you could send Michael Kopech to the minors if you wanted to.
Yeah, he has options. I knew there was options there. I just don't know at this point, you know, if he gets designated for assignment at this point, like if he gets optioned down at this point, I'd be shocked if he comes back unless he's just absolutely lights out. I mean, the problem with him has always been that when he was in Charlotte, it was max effort, and he would feast on, you know, quad A guys, and he looked great, you know, but it was the secondary pitches. It was fastball and slider. You know, you didn't have the, you know, like you said, Cease has got the curveball and the slider and the fastball, so he's got at least three very good pitches. Kopech's never really had that, you know? And I don't know. I think the issue that we had, that, you know, when me and you talked, James, is that you can't come out of the bullpen and have a 25-pitch first inning and be a viable starter, you know, and walk a bunch of guys, because that's what he's been doing. So he can't do that. So moving him to the bullpen, that was why it was our concern that he would move to the bullpen. You know, how are you going to keep a guy that walks everybody in the bullpen?
Right. Like, you still can't. Yeah. Like, those tendencies that killed him as a starter, like, could still, like, be an issue as a reliever. I think the hope is, though, that the stuff is better, right? You're not sitting here like he's trying to live throwing 95. Well, now I'll just throw 100. I mean, there's no, you know, there's like no reason not to just freaking fireball ever. And look, like, he's looked different in what is three outings, like, since they've made the announcement in spring training. I mean, he's just,
you know, I mean, he was behind in the count to a bunch of these guys, yeah. You know, at least in his first two. So, I mean, did he really look all that different? I don't know as if he necessarily looked all that much better with his command. It was just that he ended up getting outs because he could throw it a little bit harder, guess, you know?
Do you want to get to this Pilar stuff or not yet? We have a question.
Just popped that up there. Yeah, we can get to that in a minute. I just wanted to hop to the bullpen here real quick and try and answer like any of these questions that we have with the bullpen, and try and answer it as good as we can. Stick with the pitching, knock that out, and then we can move to the Kevin Pilar, Robbie Grossman saga that is happening right now. So do you have any guys in particular, Mike, that you are really looking forward to in the bullpen, other than obviously Kopech, you know, seeing what he can do out there?
Boy, oh man. Well, we're going to learn a lot about these guys once they take the mound. I'm curious who's going to make the team. But I feel like a lot of these, I'm obviously excited about Jordan Leisure, but I'm curious about what it's going to look like in Charlotte and who's going to be first up. Because I just like the way that they're building the bullpen finally, you know, internal options and then cheap free agents, essentially. And I'd like to see, oh yeah, Bailey Horn. Hey, Bailey Horn's back, guys. Let's go. That's exciting. Curious your thoughts on the Matt Thompson thing, but what a journey for Bailey Horn. But
when I saw that, I pictured Mike Rankin fist pumping in his car, like when the trade came across. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. I got excited. I started telling people that had no interest in learning about baseball, and I was super excited about Bailey Horn. I don't know if he's going to be a starter, but I mean, no. Okay. That's cool. So anyway, yeah, this bullpen, I don't know, man. We'll see. I think I was actually really excited about Tim Hill. You got a lefty, right? So that's cool. Tanner Banks is still a part of things, I assume. Guys are competing for the last spot. So I'm just looking over this roster. Tuki Toussaint getting released.
Today he did, yeah.
That kind of caught me off guard a little bit.
Ian, do you know if Baroa healthy enough to pitch or no?
He's throwing, but I don't know if he's – I don't think he's pitching.
So back end of the Charlotte bullpen could have him, Alex Spies, Bailey Horn. You know, so like some guys that are like a little bit interesting. And then honestly, like for as bad as the pitching staff was in Chicago last year, like I don't know that this bullpen's that terrible. Like, look, if you have a 3-inning start, it will be, right? Because you just like you can't cover that many innings. So I think like early on, right, if you're consistently using the pen in like the 4th or 5th, you're going to be in trouble. But I mean, if it's Wilson, Brebbia, Leisure, and Kopech, like that's not awful. You know, you got a couple of guys in there that you're probably going to trade at the deadline, and then you have some young guys that you'll see. But no, and I like, you know, I think it's a Brian Bannister thing. It was in San Francisco too, where it's like different angles and different looking guys and different like stuff. So yeah, I think it's actually a little bit interesting. So Steven Wilson, I didn't know much about, but he's solid. And then who knows, like any of these NRIs could be on this team. Yeah, like I mean, they could announce any of them. Leon, Shaw, like none of them are particularly good, but any of them could be on the team.
I kind of think Shaw is going to get launched again like he did last year. And then we'll see him pop up back around June or July just to come in and eat 90 innings for the second half. We'll see, though. Oh,
I hope not. Yeah,
I do not want to see that. That sounds terrible. I pretty much have to agree with the bullpen thing. But I mean, I think that there will be some, you know, the issue that we've had is lack of depth. I think that Charlotte's actually going to have some guys that you can bring up and are actually usable pieces. So yeah. That part's got me stoked. So
I do think one that's interesting is Jake Cousins. Because they released Tuki Toussaint, right? So Jake Cousins, if they add him to the 40-man, he does have multiple options. So that's like kind of what I was talking about earlier. If he's your 9th guy, you have to create a 40-man spot for him, but you could also send him down for Nastrini if you wanted to, like when it's time for Nastrini to start.
Yeah, but I'm also actually kind of curious that you mentioned Cousins. Yosimar Cousin... we saw him for, I think, one inning in spring training, and he didn't look terrible. I mean, he gave up some hits, which is what he does, but he generally doesn't give a very good contact. One thing that I had kind of – something that I had come to a, like my thought process was like, you know, I bet you he has to be on the 40-man, you know, or be released. And so I kind of figure – that this is going to be the last hurrah for him. Just my thought. You got any thoughts on that?
Well, they added him to the 40 at like a weird nebulous time where like he didn't need to be added. There was no reason to add him to the roster. It was just kind of like, oh yeah, the White Sox have purchased a contract of this guy, right? So yeah, you're probably right. It was probably like by a certain date. And then if you remember when he was signed, the contract was really weird. It was like 700,000, 2 million if he's in the majors, which my guess is that means like on the 40 man. So I don't know that they'll release him, but I mean, he's starting in one of the rotations if he's on the team, right? Like he's either starting in Birmingham or in Charlotte. That's a weird one. Like having to roster him doesn't really make any sense because I just think he's behind a lot of guys. Like if they, you know, this is like really bad and they need starts, right? It's going to be Thorpe and Jared Schuster and a lot of these other guys, and then Davis Martin when he's back, like Cannon. Way before you would ever let Yosimar Cousin pitch for you. So
yeah, that was my thing.
Yeah, that one's a little bit weird.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, I think I might have even, looking at the transactions page, I may have even seen that he got assigned to Birmingham, possibly. So he's a ways away. If that,
well, I think they all go. So I think they all go back to like wherever their last assignment was. Is like when they do that out of spring training. Yeah. So the NRIs go to minor league camp, but the other guys are like wherever you were last year is like where you get sent. I guess essentially.
All right then. Let me go ahead and bring up the other Pedro quote I had before we get to this positional player stuff. And this is the one that's actually, you read it and you go, you know, that's pretty good. Pedro says, I don't have a message to fans. I don't think they want one. They want to see us go out and play. And I say that because if I'm a fan, I don't want to hear it. I want to see it.
It's my manager. You guys got to buy into Grifol, man. Come on.
So brutal.
I'm waiting for him to kick somebody's ass at 7-10.
Yeah, well, he's Southside tough, so we'll see that this year. We're going to see some bunts up the third baseline. We're going to see some hit and run. So I'm talking about.
You guys think, like, Chris Getz and Gene Watson and these guys sit up there in the office and know that he's an idiot, right? I think they know. I think they lie. I think they're just lying.
They're not going to, you know.
Oh, no, they're gonna back him. I don't think they're allowed to fire him.
I was going
to
say, yeah, right. They're not going to fire him with 2 years left on the contract, so they had to bring him back for this
year. But they might with one, though.
But they might with one.
Yeah, they might with one. I hope they do with one. I hope he has just enough rope to hang himself, basically. Yeah. Like, yeah. Until Grady Sizemore becomes the next manager of the White Sox.
Major yeah, he took an internship, coach. Didn't he? Yeah, that boy. He really wants it.
I move to the positional players here. And one of the things that came up earlier in the comments, I'll go ahead and bring that up. Wolf says, I'm concerned about Vaughn. If he has a 290 OBP in mid-May, is a full platoon with him and Sheets possible? Good night. That sounds like...
I know what your answer is. What's going to happen? Oh. Who's going to be playing first, fellas?
Tim Elko.
Yeah. Hey.
I mean, that's on the table. I mean, he just keeps hitting, and he's always hit. You know, in his college days, he's an advanced college bat, and he comes into the White Sox system, and he hit. And we saw him in, the Arizona Fall League, right? Am I not mistaken?
No. Elko?
Where was he?
Yeah, not Elko.
He was
in Birmingham. Yeah,
he didn't slow down. So, I was thinking of Jacob Burke. Jacob Burke... shout out to Jacob Burke. What a stud. But I'm thinking of, yeah, Tim Elko at first base. Why not? Why not?
The problem has been with Vaughn is that, you know, just the power hasn't been there. And he's a doubles hitter at first base. And there's this. Tim Elko is also not a dwarf, which,
well, look,
I mean...
The way Andrew Vaughn makes his money is getting on base multiple times in a game. Too many times we're seeing him go 0-for, and too many times we're seeing him go 1-for-4 with a strikeout, 2 strikeouts. You know, we've been saying it, in the skill set suggests that he can spray to all fields, and he can do so with power. Give me 20 home runs. Obviously, you need more than that. But if you're going to be that type of player, you got to have multiple hits in a ballgame. You got to get on base multiple times a game. And you got to drive in runs. I don't know. Like, people kind of disregard the RBI as a stat, but I will say average with runs in scoring position, or, you know, OPS with runners on, it's got to go up. He's got to be able to have competitive at bats where he's getting on base. It's so frustrating because the profile's there, but for whatever reason, pitchers know how to get him out. And he has a tendency to chase the ball up in the zone a lot. And, you know, there's a lot more swing and miss in his game than I expected when he was drafted as a prospect. So it's been frustrating. And that's why we're talking about a guy like Tim Elko, who is older, obviously, and has limited experience as a pro. But we're seeing a guy who looks like a prototypical masher. And, you know, guys at first base are interchangeable. You can find value at first base with a lot of players who are available now. It's not going to be great, but if you match him up against Andrew Vaughn, it's going to be sort of close. And that just makes me sick to say, because it just hasn't been good so far for him. But luckily, you know, this is another year on a pretty affordable deal where there's really not a lot going on that they'll find out. I think, you know, like we say it every year, I thought last year was going to be big for him. but now is really the time for him to put it together. I don't know how much a new clubhouse is going to affect things, and you know what the culture is like now, and what the new hitting coach is going to try to work into his game. But this is a serious project for the White Sox right now. I think that's one of the biggest storylines of the year.
I'm just like shocked at how bad he is. Yeah, like, me too, man. And I thought like maybe he wouldn't hit for as much power as he did in college, Ian, but like I thought he'd be on base all the time, and he's just not. Like he doesn't hit the ball in the air, and he doesn't walk. So he's like the perfect White Sox player.
He's like the, what was that, the most advanced college bat in the draft, they said. And I don't know, just hasn't been, just has not been great. I mean, they're, you know, he has stretches where he looks really good, but then he also has stretches where he looks really bad and he just can't get a hit. And we're talking about like weeks where this happens. There's got to be some, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, I know that it's the old Greg Walker argument, you know, fire the hitting coach, and you know, maybe Marcus, Thames can help him, you know, figure out what is going wrong when he hits these slumps and help work it, you know, work through these things and have like, that's been the big problem. No consistency, you know, where he'll just drop out for like a month and a half, and that just can't happen. So, all right. So we got through that one. I'm going to go ahead and move us. I mean, we all assume what we got, the Young at shortstop with Shoemake backing him up. Now that
it seems like it. Yeah. He's like magically healed somehow. I mean, they said what, like 2 to 4 weeks or something. And then, yeah, I mean, I guess that like, I thought Danny Mendick would make the team, but I mean, it's just another roster spot you have to make. I mean, Shoemake is technically on the roster. This dude has literally never even hit in the minors. So
since low A.
So we'll see. Like maybe he'll just like be able to hold his own in the major somehow, but I doubt it. He can play all three infield spots. So you know, I like got into it with some people like on Twitter, shocker, like about Lenin Sosa. And obviously Lenin Sosa like hasn't been very good, right? But like Lenin Sosa has been very good in the minors, and Braden Shoemake has not. So exactly. I don't know. I mean, we'll see how it goes.
Well, I Shoemake's guess, better fielder though.
Way better fielder. Yes.
Yeah. And I know that has a lot to do with it in the way that they're constructing this roster, just the skill set, at the plate. He's a contact first guy, but we're seeing him make a lot of outs. So if he's your like utility bench infielder, and you he essentially takes up the last spot on your 26 man. I don't know. I guess who else would it be? Like Jose Rodriguez, Lenin Sosa. I can't really think of anybody else.
Yeah, you'd almost have to add Mendick is what it would be, because right. Yeah, like if you're gonna sit Lopez against a tough lefty, like Mendick has hit lefties in the big leagues before. I feel like if they want to do that now, it would have to be Shoemake, which doesn't Shoemake me feel very comfortable. So
how far away is Brian Ramos?
Well, he's in Birmingham probably. So no, I don't know. And I feel like
matter?
That's a
injuries. That's
oh, well, no, I don't know. I feel like that's a Moncada issue, right? I feel like we're not going to see him until Moncada's traded or DFA'd or hurt. So
that's fair.
So we might see him soon.
Yeah. Cause I only asked that, we were, look,
I meant because of hurt. That's what I meant.
Of like course. What's the outcome that we want to see by July? Is Moncada, Aloy do very well so they can try to flip them? Kopech even, some of these arms, even Chris Flexen, some bullpen pieces. We want to see them maximize as much value as we can or as they can produce so we can flip them. And I just feel like now is the year for the White Sox to make a decision on Moncada. And if he's able to, look, I mean, how much is left on his contract? Is it
1 year after
half?
This year?
Yeah. So, saying like speaking, if we're trading at the deadline, he would have.
I don't think you eat much. Yeah, I think it's like $5 million, like on a buyout. So if you traded him, if he's good, he'll have value because nobody's tied to paying him. And third base position's kind of rough. There'll be a lot of teams that would be interested in Moncada if he's, you know, his best version of himself. And then for the White Sox, you could just plug Brian Ramos in at third, which would be nice. I do think the conversation we had with Jim Callis was interesting in regards to Montgomery and the prospect incentive thing he was telling us, Mike, where a lot of these teams, because of, like, you know, they start your guy in the big league so that you can get that extra pick, like if they win rookie of the year or whatever. So a lot of teams have been getting their guys like 44 days in the majors at the end of the year. So then the next year they still count as like rookie status, I guess. So I don't know. I don't know that the Sox would do that. Like if they think that Colson Montgomery's ready June 15th, like I think they'd just call him up. But like, it is interesting to see if they wait to try to get him in line for, you know, like a rookie of the year incentive type thing next year.
I would be shocked. I'd be very surprised if the White Sox sort of manipulated, unless like he's hurt and he deals with stuff, because he hasn't put together a full season really. So I'm curious how he's able to hold up this year, but he's so close. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, you just call him up, I don't think there's any, I mean, I would have to go in there and figuratively slap all of them to say, what are you guys doing?
Well, I don't know if they care about, like,
I would hope not.
Like, or like how many at bats he needs in Charlotte. Cause I bet, I mean, I think Colson's going to Birmingham, don't you, Ian? Like, especially like looking at this roster, like, not like none of these guys are more important than Colson Montgomery. But I mean, you're going to have Sosa, Rodriguez, probably Zach Remillard, probably Mendick. Like, all these guys are going to be in Charlotte. You know, I wish Brian Ramos was in Charlotte, cause I don't really think he needs to go back to Birmingham. But
yeah, those injuries at the beginning of last year with Colson, Ramos, and Jacob Burke, it kind of screwed everything up last year, you know, because they probably, you know, you'd have Burke in Birmingham for sure, probably with some time under his belt in Double A already, and you would have had Ramos and Colson would have been in Charlotte with, you know, some time under their belt there as well, not in the fall league, you know, and that whole thing kind of mess that whole thing up. So I think it might be like a September call-up thing, if anything, for any of these guys, you know, to keep under 45 days, you know, the important dates.
Well, and I do think they're going to load up the Birmingham roster. Like, I think it's going to be pretty good. I mean, obviously, like, Getz isn't in charge of the minor leagues anymore, but under him, they had a lot of these veteran-type 4A guys in Charlotte to protect your prospects, like, in case a big league guy gets injured, you don't want to just like call up a prospect, right? So I think it's probably going to be similar. So like, I think like we've talked about the outfield in Birmingham, Burke, Varus, Tatum. I think you probably have Ramos and Montgomery there. Elko will be there. Caro will be there. So yeah, Birmingham should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, for sure. So the White Sox signed Robbie Grossman, which I'm not going to lie, it kind of caught me off guard. World champion Robbie Grossman, who is a lefty killer with a 953 OPS, 536 slugging, 416 OBP, hitting 309 against left-handed pitchers last year, 206 and a 633 OPS against right-handers, which is obviously less than ideal. So I assume that is probably the platoon that we were looking at when we were looking at Pilar earlier. But now they let Pilar go. And just to bring him back, do you think that Pilar is just going to be kind of a bridge guy to, you know, to Grossman here? Or do you think they keep Pilar around? I can't see why they would, given the 40-man roster, the 26-man roster. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so it's really weird. I'm going to get Mike's take on this in a second. But so right away, right, you see the Robbie Grossman thing. And I'm like, okay, Robbie Grossman is the new Pilar role, right? Because he's better. Like, he is. He's not better at defense, but he's a better hitter for sure. He's actually a bad defender. So here's my thought now. Like, maybe they're both on the team. And Robbie Grossman replaces Sheets like a couple of weeks into the season, because I know Grossman doesn't really hit well from the left side, right? But I've talked about Sheets this whole time. Like, I just like don't know that he's needed. And he's had a huge spring training. Like he has.
He did, yeah. He had
but
a
like
spring training.
When is he going to play? He needs to play against righties, right? But are you ever gonna sit Andrew Vaughn or Eloy to play Sheets instead?
I mean, Andrew Vaughn, maybe.
I don't know that they will, right? So I just feel like another guy that mashes lefties is more useful on this team, you know, than like a left-handed hitter that could only play first or DH, because if he plays right field, Chris Getz is a freaking liar. So, you know, I don't really think Gavin Sheets is going to play much outfield. I don't know, maybe. And I don't know how much time Robbie Grossman needs either.
Yeah, who knows how long it'll take him to get up to speed. We're assuming that Fletcher would be hitting against right-handed pitching, correct?
Yeah, every day. Yeah, I think every day.
Yeah, so the outfield essentially right now, right? Benintendi, Robert, Fletcher.
And Pilar.
Pilar and, ugh. Yeah. I mean, I didn't mean, ugh, but like, it's just the way that this roster is currently constructed, because your question, like my mind went immediately to Dylan, to Garrett Groce, not Garrett Groce, I'm sorry, to, what's his name, Gavin Sheets. What's the point now? Where is he slated? Is he going to be a DH? I mean, is he going to play DH right field, first base? When you're adding guys like Grossman and Pilar, especially after you're signing Pilar on this major league contract, these bench spots are starting to, you know, go away. And if Shoemake is one, your backup catcher is one, and you're thinking about Pilar, Grossman, Sheets, what are we doing? Does Sheets have another option? Does he have his last option?
Yeah.
So maybe that's it. Maybe he starts in Charlotte and it's Grossman and Pilar with Shoemake and a backup catcher.
Well, I don't think it's going to be Grossman yet, because I feel like he's not ready because he hasn't done anything. Mm-hmm. But I do think when he's ready, like, I feel like the guy that's the most in jeopardy is Sheets, not Pilar or Fletcher. Because it doesn't make any sense. Like, if you were to send Fletcher down, like, who are you going to play against righties? Like, Grossman? That's not why he was signed. Like, he's better against left. It's just weird. So I don't know.
Well, I think that you got to commit to Fletcher at this point. You gave up a quality arm to get this guy on your team, and you don't do that unless you believe this person's a regular, in my opinion. I think the White Sox have a plan for Fletcher. He's going to be on this team all year.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm kind of at my end with watching Sheets try to develop at the big league level. It's unfortunate because, you know, the profile looks great, but the on the field product is not so much.
Mike, you clearly didn't see Dominic Fletcher's spring training stats.
I'm buying in.
He stinks.
I'm buying in to the athlete and the mature approach. So, mm-hmm. You know, what does spring training mean, James? Everything?
I just like 5'6" guys. So.
Very important.
Yeah.
Spring training is super important, and James mm-hmm. loves it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if did you guys happen to catch the webcast yesterday, the White Sox webcast?
No, okay, who was on that?
It was the Mariners against, was it Mariners? I think it was the Mariners. I'm even blanking now. Yeah, it was Mariners because they faced Gilbert, not Gilbert, the
George Kirby.
Yes, there you go.
Ooh, yes. Okay.
Yeah, so Sheets made an error at first base. He played the entire game at first base. He tried to catch a ball from Moncada. It wasn't a great throw, but he didn't make a good decision on it. My point here is that he hasn't been concentrating on first base. He's been concentrating on the outfield. So now his first base defense doesn't look very good either. So my guess is I kind of agree with you that Sheets will probably end up in Charlotte, and they'll probably, if, you know, I don't know, 2 weeks from now when Andrew Vaughn's legs hurt and he can't start for 3 or 4 days, they'll put Shoemake at first. That's my guess.
Ugh.
Shoemake played first base with the Gwinnett Stripers last year. So
you think is he the backup first baseman right now, you think?
Yeah, because if you keep Pilar and then you keep Grossman.
Has Grossman ever played first?
I think Grossman has played a little bit of first base, but I would probably rather put Shoemake there because he's a better fielder in general.
Max Stassi is going to be the first baseman. Yeah,
he's injured too, isn't he?
I know, he's hurt. Yeah, Corey. So it sounds like Corey Lee is going to make the team, which, like, good for him, right? Like I can sit here and make fun of spring training all I want, but he had a really good spring. So he might find his way onto the team. And if he hits, like, you know, maybe you just Max Stacy never plays for the White Sox. Like, I mean, this is this, these things happen.
So the catchers, I mean, sorry, Ian.
No,
Maldonado,
you're good.
Right? Maldonado, mm-hmm. who needs to hustle every play out, which is okay.
Stop. Guys, come on. Stop, man. It. You're going
to 40-year-old needs to run first.
Did you hear
base,
did you
hard.
Listen? Did you listen when we talked about that or no?
I may have caught it.
I
only bring it up because look, I don't mind instilling the hustle play hard culture into your clubhouse. You know, you buy into every pitch. I want to see that. But this is a 40-year-old who has done so much in this game. He doesn't need to be running out a slow tapper in spring training. I'm sorry. Give the guy some grace. The dude's a veteran. Anyway, the catching position, right? The Stassi injury kind of opens up an opportunity for one of the young guys. How close is Adam Hackenberg? Because, like, I've been rooting for him for a while. I don't know if Carlos Perez is ahead of him at this point. Obviously, Corey Lee already has some time in the bigs. What do you guys think?
I'll just throw this out there. Okay, so I like Adam Hackenberg. He changed his batting approach last year and became more of a contact guy as opposed to a power guy. And so his batting average and his OBP went up a little bit, which is nice. But like kind of the thing with Carlos Perez is that the guy he's shown that he can hit pretty well. But last year, if you've paid any attention to the lineups they were putting out, they brought up Evan Skoug. They brought up, I can't even remember the guy's name anymore because it doesn't matter. You know, they put everybody in at catcher in Charlotte except for Carlos Perez. They put him at DH or first base. So that, to me, tells me where Carlos Perez is on their, you know, list of priorities. So that I hope that answers your question, is that I don't think that Carlos Perez is really anywhere, even though he's gotten some service time.
Yeah.
Just seems that they don't like him there.
Well, so, now without Corey Lee, you would think Hackenberg will get the majority of the time in Charlotte, I would think, unless like Chucky Robinson lives, right? I mean, that's...
I think he's going to.
Yeah, like, I think
I wouldn't be surprised.
He probably Perez survives and he's there. And then obviously Michael Turner's sharing time with Caro in double, but... yeah, I don't know. I mean, how close is Hackenberg? I mean, look, I think if Stassi's hurt and something happens, whatever, to Maldonado or to Lee, I mean, Hackenberg might be the next guy. The problem is you have to add him to the 40-man, and I just don't think they want to do that. So mm-hmm. I think they would rather, at that point, you just add Chucky Robinson in a pinch, bring him up, because then you don't feel as bad like cutting him like as soon as it's like done, basically.
Hackenberg defensively is...
pretty
fantastic.
Good. Yeah.
It's just a bat. I don't know how he's going to do if he gets brought up. I don't know how the bat's going to go. That's
well, and Hackenberg can play first too, but I just like, I don't know how you go to Charlotte and don't just freaking try to launch away. Like I mean, it's like messed with guys. Like when me and Mike used to talk to guys all the time that it was like the opposite, right? It would mess up guys both ways. Cause you'd have to look at pitcher stats kind of with like a grain of salt, right? Because it's like, oh man, these guys are getting pounded. But then the hitters sometimes would go there and get screwed up too, because like you just like want to go there and mash, and it like kind of can mess with your approach a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious. You know, when you look at it, you look at the pitching stats, the last thing I'm doing is looking at, you know, what opponent's slugging percentage is, unless it's, you know, like 800 or something like that, then obviously it's a thing. But you guys got anything else on this roster stuff going on here? I bring up this Kevin Pillar thing just so we can talk about the oddity that this video is.
Oh, you got a video for us. Cool.
Let me go ahead and bring that up here. Where's it?
You feel like you've been in this game a long time. You feel like you've you know, experienced everything that can be thrown at you in this game. And I was wrong. I mean, it was definitely it was a bit shocking. You know, given you know what I thought my role was going to be on this team coming into camp. You know, kind of helping create a little bit different environment inside those clubhouse walls. felt like I was having a pretty good spring, and then you know, got the call, and just the uncertainty of the future was, you know, the toughest part. You know, there's a time in my life where I'd be pretty ecstatic to be home and be able to pick my kids up and take them to school, and you know, my daughter had a softball game, my son had t-ball photos, and you know, that stuff was great, but you know, I just committed so much, you know, over this offseason, these last 5 weeks in spring training. Felt like I had a lot to offer, and just not knowing if I was going to get a chance to, you know, come back here or get a chance to sign them somewhere else, it was definitely tough. So, you know, when, you know, Getsy called me up again and we were able to work something out, I was equally as excited as I was relieved. Oof.
Man. Now, I'm not saying that I particularly, you know, I have no emotional attachment to Kevin Pillar at all. But listening to that, I kind of wonder what's going on. Do they not have conversations with him? Because he sounds like, you know, from what I heard from all the press that covered the whole thing, the thing that they said is that he knew that he was probably coming back. But listening to that interview, it seems like he had no idea whether he was coming back.
Well, what kind of communication was being had? Was it sounded like there he was left in the dark at the tail end of his spring training tenure before he got extended the major league offer. And I just don't remember seeing someone get cut from a minor league deal just to be brought back on a major league deal. That was so weird.
Well, I mean, they're clearly saving money, right? So he was like $3 million, I think he was going to get, or it might have even been more than that. It might have been like $3.5 million. And I don't know like much about these like drop dead dates, basically, where it's like, I think it's either like yay or nay, right? Like it was, you're either adding a guy to the 40 or you're just releasing them. And they chose to release him and Moustakas, and gambled, basically, knowing like, hey, we can bring this guy back cheaper because he doesn't have any offers. Like maybe the agent knew that and didn't relay it to Kevin Pillar. Like I don't, that was bizarre though. Like it was just totally sh- and like I assume when they cut him that he had an opportunity elsewhere and they just, you know, were
thought you were, we were letting him go. A favor.
Yeah, right. And it's like, oh, Getsy called me and worked something out. It's like, okay.
All right. They clearly didn't tell him what their plan was. They didn't want to say, hey, we're going to put you on waivers here. We're going to take this risk. We're going to see if anybody picks you up, offer you a contract. But if not, we're going to bring you back. And it seemed like that didn't happen because he said, yeah, well, when I got the call, it was relief. But it seemed like he was, I don't know if it didn't sound like he was promised anything. It just seemed like it was intimated that he would be on this team as a backup, play the role as a veteran. That's why he signed with the club. Now, I don't know what the interest was around the league, but that was pretty telling.
Probably minimal is my guess, the interest around the league. It's almost sad. Like, I almost feel bad because it's like you're this, like, decorated, nice guy veteran, and you're, like, have to come back to play for this team. It's, like, kind of rough, but
Any chance to stay in the bigs, this is probably his best opportunity to get as many at-bats as possible. So, look, I don't blame him for feeling so slighted. I mean, I could put it that way, you know, just because that's a lot in, like, a 20-hour span.
Well, but at least he gets to drive around in the car on Thursday and then face Tariq Skubal, right? So,
yeah, hey, I mean, man, I don't know. The White Sox might hang around 500. And then trade a bunch of guys in July, not to improve the roster, but to allow the young players to get up and win some games.
Hang around 500 until like May or until like April 10th, maybe.
Man,
like
that'd be so. Like, I think that's what I'm rooting for. April 10th. I want 10th, the White Sox to be.
They're like 5-6, and we're like, yes.
Yeah, be around 500 as long as possible. That's my goal.
Yeah, I don't know. You listen to his comment when he says, you know, I was brought here, you know, like I thought I was brought here to be, you know, like kind of like a, to redo the culture and just like, that's where I feel bad for him, you know, is that they sold him on this role with the team.
Yep. Never mind.
And then they let him go and they're like, yeah, see ya. And then later they're like, oh yeah, we're going to bring you back. And like, if he didn't know that, that's not the way I would hope that they would be doing business, I wouldn't think.
I think we should have done the whole podcast on clubhouse culture. Ugh, it's a big talking point on White Sox Twitter right now.
Well, I mean, people hate on it, but I mean, it's a thing, whether you disagree or not. I mean, like, you got to be able to, you know, like the guy next to you. Look, that's something that I could get really worked up about, because I've been a part of bad clubhouses, not as a professional, but just in my playing days. And also, I saw what a bad clubhouse looks like last year and the year prior. It impacts the game on the day to day, the energy, what you bring to the table, your interest, your care, right? Like, oh, here's another loss. We're going to lose again tomorrow. Let's just get through it and lose again. And that was the mindset. So I just want a different style of baseball to be played every day on the field. And it looks like this roster is capable of doing that. They're not going to hit very well, but I want to see them play good defense. I want to be surprised by the pitching, and I want competitive at-bats. If they're going to make a lot of outs, it is what it is. But if there's growth and we see some prospects get called up, this season will be worth following. Otherwise, fire Pedro Grifol, fire Chris Getz, get Jerry out of here, sell the team, all that stuff. But I'm optimistic about 2025. I think there's finally something here that we can legitimately say, oh, okay, I can see this vision. You just got to get past 2024 because it's going to be pretty ugly.
I'm very worried about all the bunts. Like, I'm really worried. I think we're going to get more bunts than we've seen in a long time.
Don't sacrifice bunt. If you want to try to get on via bunt, base hit.
Oh, they're going to sack bunt. They got, but, like, I bet Moncada sack bunts in the first inning on Thursday.
I really hope they don't. That would give me so upset.
Hey, but he's the two hitter. That's what you do. You have to give yourself up in the two hole.
Yeah, if Benintendi doubles, book it. Yoan Moncada's bunting. Sacrifice bunting. He's absolutely bunting.
You know, what game? Was it game four of the World Series in the ninth inning? Or maybe it was game three, I forget.
Yeah.
But
D-backs, yeah.
No, I'm talking about the 05 World Series.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I'm talking about 2005. I think it was a one-run game, and the Astros just gave the White Sox an out. Bobby Jenks was kind of rattled.
And that was also 20 years ago.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Like, even then, when I watched it back, I was like, why are you bunting?
Yeah.
Maybe at the time I was like, that's cool. But now I'm like, don't bunt. Don't bunt. I'm not so hard on never bunting, because sometimes, occasionally, possibly bunt, I'm okay with. But most of the time, especially if you're sacrifice bunting nowadays, you got to sell me on the situation. Just swing away.
If I had a guy that was pitching that had a broken ankle and the third baseman was playing back on the very edge of the outfield grass, and I had a guy that could hit that was hitting like 189, maybe I'd think about it. Otherwise, no thanks.
I like Danny Miller's quote. You want to stay in the game you love, and I want to milk the last little bit of baseball you have in you. Yeah, I actually watched Moneyball like a couple weeks ago. What a film, I tell you. Is that going to be the White Sox this year or what?
Well, I looked at the payroll today. And we're like at, what, 129, I think, for the active payroll or something
it's
like
too
that?
Too much.
For what's there, yeah.
It's absolutely. Too much, yeah. It's yeah.
Well, yeah. Benintendi, I mean, Grandal's gone. You know,
Benintendi, Moncada, Eloy, yep.
Robert.
No, he's fine. Yeah.
So, I'm just saying.
Speaking of Yasmani Grandal, if you have not caught that White Sox Dave bit on the 108 with the quote about Yasmani Grandal, it's worth searching out. I'm not gonna say it on here, but probably something worth looking up. You guys got anything else for this week?
Yeah. So really quick. So, and this isn't really for Mike. It's for you, Ian. Give me your. I guess your. I know how it ended. 1994. How much did you love that team? That was like the first team that I feel like 93 and 94, I was like eight. And I love Frank Thomas. That's like why I'm a White Sox fan. And then my dad had to explain to me, like, you know, why there was no season and, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf, whatever. But just like reminiscing today, because Van Scowen wrote an article about it, and I'm pretty sure they're having the team back this year, most likely, right? It's going to be the 40th anniversary, I think. So, yeah, that was that team was fun.
It was. But I mean, you know, it ended a couple months too early. So, you know, we didn't get to see the potential in that stuff. So
Our buddy Steve Peredzinski, did you see on Twitter? He's so his whole thing right now is that he's saying that team was better than the 2005 team, and people are very mad at him. But that's his contention. And I mean, you had two Hall of Famers on that team. Like,
I mean, I could see a case for both. I mean, but you know, we'll never know. You know, that's the unfortunate bit is that, you know, they could have won the World Series. And between them, I think, you know, between them and Montreal, there's going to be a real fight, you know, if they did make it to the World Series. But I mean, you know, we'll never know. You know?
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
I think that the 2004 team was like really good. And then they got hurt. So.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And then, you know, Carlos Lee, my guy, gets traded for Pods, and the rest is history. So. Yeah, I don't have a 1994 versus 2005 and thinking of really which one was better, because I think that the fact that the last half of the season didn't really get to finish kind of just I don't think there's really any way you can make that argument, you know, because who knows, could have been that in the last month of the season they completely choked it away like the 2005 Sox did, but just managed to make it in, you know? Who knows?
How good is Michael Soroka?
I mean, if spring training matters, like he looks like he did earlier with the Braves than he did like later with the Braves. That's another guy who, if he's good, you'll either see if you can extend the relationship or, you know, probably trade him somewhere.
I'm hyped. I'm really excited about Soroka. I think he's awesome.
He no-hit the Knights last year for 7 innings, if that means anything to you.
He's on the team for next year.
You know, he looked pretty decent in AAA last year. And, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I kind of think that another year away from AAA should be, or from TJ, or the Achilles, he should be healthy and good, I would think.
Yeah, and he is the type of guy that, like, Brian Bannister's gotten success out of.
Yep.
I'm rooting for him.
We'll see.
I'm excited about Nastrini, man. I think he's going to make the team pretty early, whether it's not right away, I don't know. But it seems like everything is in play for him to make the team. I want to see development out of Jake Eater big time. I'm curious if Kai Bush is going to be competitive enough to pitch this year in the big leagues. I want to see Jared Schuster. You know, I want to see some of these guys that they got in return. You know, make strides. I'm excited to see Drew Thorpe. I want to watch him pitch. And I want to see whether or not he's going to be ready midseason, or if we're talking opening day next year as more realistic. But it's the arms that are really getting me locked in to the optimism and kind of seeing what could happen. They need to develop an ace. Maybe it's Garrett Crochet if he's able to build that innings limit. It's a little bit further down the line, but forgive my optimism. I think the arms are what's really exciting about this group, plus a couple of core position players, obviously, with Colson Montgomery and Brian Ramos.
I mean, there are some things to be happy about for sure. And I think that, you know, we've talked about this on here. I think we're both pretty positive that the pitching is going to be better than most people are giving it credit for, but they're still not going to hit. So they're not going to win any games. So just my thought.
Alrighty. Yeah, I'm all good. Mike, thanks for coming out of retirement and joining us.
Sure. No, it's a pleasure. Happy to do it whenever you want me.
Yeah, thanks for coming up, Mike. Appreciate it. FutureSox.net. You can find written content. You can find all of our podcasts, and you can find all of these lovely videos on YouTube. Support us on Patreon if you would be so kind. It is on the website. Twitter, you can find us at Future Sox. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He is James Fox at James Fox 917. Mike Rankin down on the end at Rankin 906. You can find us every Sunday night at 8 o'clock on YouTube and Twitch. We also have 2 other podcasts / streams. Elijah and Jeff Cohen do the roundup on Monday nights. It drops on Tuesday mornings. They are not live, but the YouTube shows up. Got a special request for your dog over there, Mike.
Where is he? I got it. There he is.
In approximately 5 minutes, Good Guys Talk Back starts on their channel over here on YouTube, and Sleepy Harold, aka Sleepy Harold, Steve Hassman, is guesting on there with our Nick Morawski over there. And then on Tuesday nights, we have Hot Takes and Heaters with Danny Miller and Nick Morawski. We thank you guys so much for hanging out and commenting. We appreciate you listening. Please like and subscribe, and we'll see you guys.